So let's take a look at Parakeet. We already started to talk about this last time when we took a preliminary look at Parakeet, but how would we divide, just skimming back over from last week, skimming back over the text, how would we break up Parakeet? Do you remember?
It's still sitting on the board,
so it makes it even easier. We have this first part, which is just Pasuk Aleph, broken up by the Stumot, which is seemingly poetically, the melting of the hearts of the Malchei Kanaan, of the kings of Kanaan, but basically the fear of the nations. Then we have the second component, which is the national circumcision. That's totally spelled wrong. Let's go with it. That's circumcision. National circumcision. The third part is something having to do with Pesach, but is clearly also having to do with the man. So we've got here Pesach and the transition out of the man into the Tu'at Ha'aretz. And then the fourth section, which is Yehoshua and the Malach, where he meets the Malach Hashem. So, yeah. Those are our four pieces here. And we tried to come up with some sort of unifying theme as to what would bring these together. It doesn't matter that they exist as one perek. We said the prakim themselves aren't compelling. But certainly Prakim, Gimel, and Dalet, when we took them together as unit of the crossing of the Jordan, and what you just read, which is Perek Vav, is clearly the conquest of Jericho. Meaning, what bookends these two stories as the crossing and the beginning of the conquest, it's not my spelling day, the beginning of the conquest, these two stories kind of put this in a grouping. In a meaningful grouping. I mean, there has to be either there are four short stories, short vignettes that exist independent of each other, or they have to be unified as taking us from the crossing of the Jordan to the beginning of the conquest of Jericho. If we assume that they are intrinsically linked, although they are separated by Stumot, question is, what is it that's linking them? What kind of overarching theme we put on top of them? We discussed some possibilities last Tuesday. I spent a lot of time thinking about this. Like I said, I'm still trying to work out what exactly is happening in Parakeet. Here's what I think is a better way to look at Parakeet, even than I had last year in the way that I've had it in my head. Imagine that you're taking a flight to another country. The flight is the journey itself. But before you actually enter the country, you have to go through the airport. And in the airport, you have customs. And in the airport, you have to get your new currency. Meaning you have to begin to first create a new relationship. A new relationship with the land that you're coming to, even before you, metaphorically and literally, break through the walls of that new place. We haven't yet broken through the walls that hold us outside of Eretz Yisrael, but we've landed in Eretz Yisrael, we crossed. I think this is, if you want to put it in a more pithy way, this is, let's see, English, no, let's see, Roman English. It's almost like, if you would, customs is what this parak is doing. It's giving us our new relationship to the land, and the land's new relationship to us. That was why I was always struggling with what it was doing here, because we haven't entered yet, but we have entered. We've crossed, we haven't gone in. And we're going to talk about in a few minutes the nature of Perek Vav in terms of breaking through those walls. That's what I think Parakeet is trying to accomplish. It's redefining that relationship as we begin to enter the land before we've even gotten into the physical land itself on a level of breaking through the walls of Jericho. Watch that play out now. The fear of the other nations. That's an immediate response of the land to our presence. But not only is it an immediate response of the land to our presence in the land, it's the natural response that's supposed to happen. We're meant to take over the land when we come in. God promised it to us. God told us that we're destined to take over that land. And the immediate response should be the fear of the other nations, the other nations falling apart in the face of the inevitable conquest. The land is reacting to our sudden presence. the way it's supposed to. It may not play out that way. We may not follow through. It may not follow through. But that's the immediate reaction of the land. Then we have to start to settle and redefine what our connection is to that land. What is it going to be? Redefining that relationship. And that brings us back to very significant issues of Brit Milah. The paragraph from Perakei Pasuk Bet to Perakei Pasuk Chet really emphasizes the nature of this shift from one generation, the generation of the way that this paragraph describes it. The generation that leaves Egypt contrasted to the generation that enters the land, and it defines them separately as such. And that there seems to be a cycling back to replay some of the significant events which defined us as the nation that left Egypt, where we need to go through the same processes, but as a new people 40 years later, literally, meaning that whole nation died out, as a new people, have to go through those same processes to define us as the nation that will enter the land. And you even look at the first pasuk there, it emphasizes that twice, with twos. Ba'itahi amar Hashem al Yehoshua, asidra charvot zirim, vishuv, again, a second time, that word didn't need to be there, shuv, go back again, mol, circumcise of B'nai Yisrael, shenit. There's an emphasis on twos, on going back, on repeating. And then the whole paragraph seems to make a distinct contrast between the generation that left Egypt and the generation that enters the land. There was a national circumcision that was required to enter into. In Lashon HaKodesh, it's called a Brit Milah. Brit Milah, what's a Brit? What's a Brit?
Covenant.
A covenant. So we come into a covenant with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We come into a covenant with a Kadosh Baruch Hu when we leave Egypt. And the nature of that covenant revolves around Brit Milah. We'll come back to that in a second. But it doesn't seem to be strong enough to get us into the land. That's the kind of center pasuk of that paragraph, and the central pasuk of the paragraph, which is pasuk vav. Ki arba'im shana halchu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, for 40 years the Jews traveled in the desert. Ad tom kol hagoy anshei hamilchama hayotzim mimitzrayim, until the end of that nation, the people who were counted for war, who left Mitzrayim, they're constantly called those who are Yotzei Mitzrayim, who are defined as Asher lo shamu b'kol Hashem, they did not listen to the voice of God. The relationship between God and the Jewish people, although it was established with a brit, was not strong enough that the relationship was in the right place. We couldn't hear each other. The relationship was not where it needed to be. The dedication wasn't there. That generation needs to die out. Asher nishpa Hashem levilti harotam et haaretz, and because of that, they can't be machnisei Eretz Yisrael. They can't enter into the land. Asher nishpa Hashem laavotam, which God promised them, latet lanu Eretz zavat chalav udvash, which He then promised to give us a land flowing with milk and honey. Just for those who were careful when they read, there's a weird pronoun shift there. The whole paragraph is written in third person, and then suddenly it's to give us. It's not even clear if anybody's speaking or what's happening on a text level, on a pshat level. The fact that it says lanu does not belong in that pasuk, but that's, I think, an emphasis on the text of the fact that we've now created that shift so much that we're living in the second brit. Not the brit of, I'm no longer defined on the contrasting background of Egypt, but rather the positive sense of I'm being defined as the person who's going to be able to enter and live in Eretz Yisrael. There wasn't enough of a pull out of Egypt, that even though we left Egypt, it wasn't enough. So we were the Yotzei Mitzrayim who had our brit of trying to keep Brit Milah, but there was a whole new level of brit that was necessary to go into the land. Why is the content of that Brit Milah? So that exists all over Chumash, which is that the land of Israel requires and demands a level of purity and relationships between men and women. It demands that from us. And if we look at Pesukim, that actually in the Chumash group that we looked at last week, it's an amazing thing, the way that the Torah defines the two nations who are anti-Brit Milah, or if you will, anti a concept of sexual purity. Those two nations are defined in the paragraph called Parshat HaArayot and Parshat HaChrimot, which is in Vayikra, Perek Yudchet, Pesukim, Aleph, until the end of the Parsha. We read it on Yom Kippur. Watch how the parak opens up. Watch how the parsha opens up. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'mor,
Daber al b'nei Yisrael. Talk to b'nei Yisrael. Amartah lehem, ani Hashem Elokechem. I'm Hashem your God. Kima'asei Eretz Mitzrayim, like the ways of Eretz Mitzrayim, asher yishav temba, which you stayed in, which you lived in. Lo tasu, don't do like them. But who else should you not do like? Does the Torah warn them? Ukimase eretz Kanaan, asher ani meviatchem shama lo tasu. But also don't do like Kanaan, where I'm going to take you. The two bookends of our experience of the travel to become the Jewish people are defined as don't be like Mitzrayim and don't be like Kanaan, both of whom are the preface to the whole list of immoral sexual relations in Parshat Arayot. Don't be like that. Because coming into the land, coming into a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and coming into the land requires a relationship to purity in these areas. That's defined as a requirement. So much so that at the end of that paragraph, we're told, if we come into the land and we don't live up to those standards, it's an incredibly powerful lashon that's used there. We're told, Vataki ha'aretz et yoshveha, that the land will literally vomit you up. The land, not as a punishment. This land that you're going to come into is a land of Kiddushah. Kiddushah is defined as, and we'll talk about this more when we get into Sefer Vayikra issues, Kiddushah is defined as a definitive relationship between myself and one other person. I am totally devoted to that other person, that other being. A relationship of Kiddushah, Kiddushin, Hare'at, we say, Mekudeshet Li, meaning you're totally, as Tosfot says, you're separated, you're taken away for me, it's just me and you, there's a singular relationship. That's what Kedusha is at its core, between a husband and a wife, and also between God and the Jewish people. There's that singular relationship. So we can't have Avodah Zarah. It's like straying, which all of the Nevi'im Achronim talk about. It's like straying with another wife, straying with another spouse, straying with another husband. Why? Because there's a singular focus and dedication. So when we leave Mitzrayim, we need a brit milah to enter into a covenant of being totally dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which gets us out of Mitzrayim. But lo shimu b'kol Hashem, the relationship didn't get to where it needed to get to. And in the desert of the wilderness, that generation disappears. A new generation that's born in the wilderness, where there's nothing that defines them, emerges, and now defines themselves as an Eretz Yisrael people, re-engaging Shenit in a Brit Milah, dedicating themselves to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and dedicating themselves to what the land requires of them, with a second Brit Milah. Questions, thoughts, comments on that part up until now? Good? Okay, that takes us through parts 1 and 2. Part 3 is very specific to Israel also, to Eretz Israel also. We move, I mean, this one is a giveaway, so with all of the shirin that we did to prepare for Yoshua, even in Chumash. We move from the man to Tvuat Ha'aretz. Why would we need to move from man to Tvuat Ha'aretz? What's that symbolizing? Think of our Chumash Shirim, that in Yoshua and Chumash Shirim, we talked about the whole setting the stage for Sefer Yoshua.
It's like we're transitioning to having to work for things rather than having them given to you, like by means of miracles.
Excellent. That's I think, in a nutshell, exactly what we're experiencing. The man is God miraculously giving us bread from the heavens, lecha min hashamayim. The bracha was hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. Two, hamotzi lecha min haaretz. To being able to see God in the more mundane. We talked about this, finding the miraculous in the mundane. So the relationship here needs to be focused now on a land-oriented relationship where we see the man in the aretz. But we leave the man behind and we need to create a new relationship. It's a relationship dedicated to the land, devoted to the land, recognizing that God is relating to us through the land and he's still there. And that pulled together for me what I think is the fourth discussion here as well, which is Yoshua and the Malach. Yeah?
What about the Pesach?
Pesach, just because we're short on time, but Pesach I think is all relating to the same concept. Pesach in its origins is shechting the gods of the Egyptians, leaving that mentality behind, and also Pesach in itself is the root of Emunah, of a relationship between us and God. It's definitionally a relationship between us and God. If you really want to go into it, even for a second, what Pesach is attempting to accomplish, and the Ramban at the end of Parshat Bo says this explicitly in a glorious Ramban at the very, very end of Parshat Bo, he says that there were tons of signs and miracles in Egypt. But the goal of those miracles, says the Ramban, which is why everything is Zecher Liyetziat Mitzrayim, is to see that God does tremendous wonders, then he also is the God who exists within the mundane of the nature. He exists within the nuances of nature. So we come back to Pesach, which defines, again, that we need to be singularly devoted in a relationship of emunah with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in the smaller things as the man falls away and we're actually living what Pesach was meant to be, which is a transition to a full relationship with God despite the miracles no longer being there. The miracles only being a means to an end. This is the end. We've arrived. Thank you for calling me out on it. But yes, that was what that piece is doing there also. Let me come to Yeshua and the Malach. Yeshua and the Malach is the odd story that also seems to get us ready for Yericho, because Yericho begins to get sprinkled in here as well. What happens? Yeshua goes. He sees a man standing opposite him. The charbo shelufai b'yavo, he has the sword that's in his sheath. And Yeshua says, are you with us or are you not with us? Which is a dangerous conversation in and of itself. Meaning, if you're looking at an enemy, my answer would be yes, and then you go and stab him, right? I mean, like, what? The whole conversation is a very odd conversation. Are you with us or are you not with us? Then he says, no, I'm a tzar tzva Hashem. Yeshua falls on his face. And he says, what do you have to tell me? Vayomer tzar tzva Hashem el Yeshua, and pasuk tedvav. Shal na'alcha mi'al raglecha, take your shoe off. Ki ha'makom asher ata omer alav kodeshu. Vayas Yeshua came. Take your shoe off because the ground that you're standing on is kadosh. I think this is the final re-emphasis for Yehoshua on the deepest of levels. There are angels walking amongst us, so to speak. What looks like man can often be God. What looks like land can often be Kedusha. And as we define Yehoshua as the quintessential person who is going to always have to have the clarity of seeing godliness in the mundane, this is his last call out by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remember to see God in the mundane. If you take a look at what Rashi says on this pasuk, I think it brings out another floor even deeper. Rashi says this is actually a handoff. Way back in Parshat Ki Tisa on Sefer Shmot, we're told that God is going to send an angel to lead us. And Moshe says, nothing doing. Not interested. God, it's you or bust. Why? Parentheses. Because we're living in a desert reality, a midbar reality, where miracles are around us, where God is overt. Says Rashi, this Malach is the Malach coming and saying, remember when Moshe fought for God to lead you and me not to lead you? Well, welcome, now I'm here. How does that fit into our paradigms? We're moving from that overt sense of godliness to, again, seeing the godliness in a more... God is seemingly more distant, and we have to work to make sure to see him and relate to him. It's not for free anymore. It's not a desert anymore. There's no more man. It's literally, no, there's no more man. It just left. There's no more Be'er. There's no more Esh. There's no more Ananim. All of that's gone. And even God's presence isn't as overt. But if you look carefully, you'll see God is still there carrying us along the way. Around us in life, the person who looks like an ish omed lenegdo can be a malach. The land that you're standing on is hamakom asher ata omed alav kodeshu. It's pure kedusha, which is why we need the brit milah, which is why we need the emunah, which is why we need Pesach. Yehoshua, you need to make sure to see in the finest of levels that God is permeating everything. Because if you lose sight of that, that's game. That's the emphasis for Yehoshua here. That's the final piece of landing, so to speak, in Eretz Yisrael, so that we can then break through the walls. We'll take a second break, and then we'll do chapter 6.